You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon from LA on a Monday. I know usually my show is on a Wednesday, but this is a very special show. I have a very special guest, but I am first introducing myself. I'm Yael Kagan. I am a hypnotherapist. I am master in neurolinguistic programming, and I am master in numerology. I usually talk in the show about different subjects from my world of therapy, but I have other guests, and today I have a very, very special guest, and I would like to introduce my next special guest, Mr. Simcha Greinman. He is a Zaka deputy commander, a Zaka veteran, and a volunteer. Welcome, Simcha, to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, it's my pleasure, and I want to give you, like, you know, a very quick introduction so that the audience will know who you are.
Okay, my name is Simcha Greinman. I'm a carpenter on a daily basis. I'm a volunteer in Zaka International, a volunteer for 32 years in Zaka. Zaka is a special organization that deals with deceased people in tragedies, basically. On a normal basis, the Red Cross comes, or Magen David, or Hatzalah United would come to a car accident or a regular situation. But what we deal with is basically tragedies, like mass tragedies, or different situations that we have bodies and body parts and remains. We're internationally known as, in the UN, as a search and rescue team. We go around the world helping after earthquakes and different disasters, like a tsunami, in Bombay after the bombing over there, 9/11. Anywhere that we're needed around the world, we come to help. And this is our main thing, is to care for humanity.
Understood. And you are based in Israel?
We're based in Israel. That's our main place that we're based for 38 years. From the starting of Zaka. And but after terror attacks and after different situations, every place we come around the world, we try to train people and to be able to have another search and rescue team over there as Zaka members in any country that we try to help them out, to be able, if there's ever another need, we have people already on the sides from Zaka as trained, and then we always come to help more if we need it.
Okay, and is that are you a non-profit organization? How are you being supported? Because I see that you are a volunteer.
As I said, we have 4,000 volunteers in Zaka, men, wow, women, Jews, Muslims, and Christians, from all cultures. It does not make difference who you are, what you are. If you want to make good for humanity, if you want to be there for the other people that need your help, that's our understanding. What it means, humanity, all are God's creation. And by that understanding, we have everything, everyone. And we're a nonprofit organization. We are not relied on any country or any government. We, thank God, are able to help with donations and funds that different people care for the situation and try to help. But as we understand, no one was ready for a mass situation like this in Israel. And you're talking about supplies of Zaka basically for a year was finished in less than 3 days. Just by right. Understanding, this is a situation that we had to deal over there.
Absolutely. And I'm going to dive into, like, the main subject of this episode, because I find it super important so that we can share it with others. And I want to dive into the October 7 And as I was looking today before I was preparing for the show, and I went actually on ChatGPT, which was one of the biggest platform of AI those days, and I was trying to ask for information about October 7, and I was very disturbed to see that it has no information whatsoever about October 7. Then I went to Google to see what I can find over there, just so that our audience not, you know, necessarily knows what it was, and it's important for me to address it. So on October 7, Hamas, which is a terror organization, their led militant group launched a surprise attack on Israel, which involved a rocket barrage and of an estimated 3,000 militants, which I will call terrorists, breached the Gaza-Israeli barrier and attacking Israeli civilians, communities, and military bases. During this attack, Google said 1139, so what, 1139, I'm not sure if that's the actual number, but Israelis and foreign nationals were killed, including 766 civilians and 373 security personnel. In addition, 259 Israelis and foreigners were taken captive into Gaza, and there are still about 120 that are still held hostage in Gaza. Some are alive, some are not. We don't have any information. And in saying that, you were one of the first people to appear, to approach those places, because it was a complete military closed areas. And everything we got were actually from Telegram, from the terrorists themselves, from their own movies that they published of what exactly they were doing. But I am going to dive into that and ask you, what was Zaka's response on October 7? How did the events of that day differ from other emergencies that you've faced until now? Can you hear me, Simcha? We're having some difficulties here. Simcha, can you hear me? Simcha, can you hear me now?
Do you hear me?
I can hear you.
Disconnected.
Can you hear me now? Simcha?
We can hear you.
You cannot hear me?
No, I can hear you, but you're going back and forth.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the microphone to just tell us what have you saw there. What give us the information that you can share with us from October 7.
Well, on October 7 is something that we can't really imagine or really understand what we saw, what we dealt with. On a daily basis, when we get called in for a car accident, so you know what you're going to be facing, between one and five people. Over here, when you have a bus or a minivan, you know how much people you're going to be facing in the hardest situation that you can imagine. Over here, we dealt with hundreds of bodies on the highways, on situations that you can't really imagine what you're being faced. Going through highways, collecting from the highways, car by car, going through things that you can't believe what you see in front of your eyes. In 32 years of my volunteer, I dealt with buses that blew up in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, Netanya, all around the country. and I dealt with cars that got burned on different situations. Over here, when we came to the cars, what was left was only a skeleton. Basically, the remains were bones. And when we tried to collect them, everything disintegrated into ashes in seconds. So what we're facing was a situation that you can't believe and you can't imagine what you're facing, what you're seeing. And we had to vacuum clean every corner of the car to try to get information and to build the DNA out of those ashes, to be able to try to identify the people that got killed in that car. Going through the kibbutzim one by one, house by house, every house was a story that you cannot believe, you cannot imagine. Dealing with situations that unbelievable stories that you never in your life would want to face a situation like that. Before entering any house, you would pray to God that the eyes of the people will be closed. Because you can't really face a situation like that. You're in trauma that you can't believe it. Stories that coming into a house, smelling the smell of the burned bodies, smelling the blood that was poured there, coming into a room, seeing a bed of a elderly person, a Holocaust survivor, cut to pieces. It's unbelievable. There's things that you can't imagine and you can't control. Your brain cannot really function with that situation.
Can you share some of those stories? Simcha, can you hear me?
No, I can't hear your question.
I said, can you try to share? I know it's very difficult. It's also difficult to hear that, but can you share some of the experiences, whether in any of the army bases or a kibbutz that you got into? What were you finding there? Because you were probably the only people that were able to enter those areas.
When we came into the kibbutzim, we saw disasters that you can't believe and your eyes cannot imagine. You cannot believe what you're seeing in front of your eyes, that human beings could do these things. We came into a house, and one of the houses that we walked in was a birthday cake sitting on a table in the living room. So when you see a birthday cake, you say to yourself, okay, it was a party, it was Simchat Torah, it was a holy festival that day, and maybe it's someone's birthday even. And you right away look around to see pictures or familiar faces or something to connect between that cake and someone. And as you look at this, you can't really control yourself to even connect to it, because the smell from the burned bodies from the back room was horrendous. It's something that you can't believe and you can't control the smell of it. And we walked into the back room and I put on a flashlight. And what we saw in front of our eyes were two little skulls in the middle of the room connected like one big lump of something. And there were another two bigger skulls up on top. So it was basically a family. They were trying to protect the family, the children. Everyone together was burned, and there was nothing left from them. Trying to understand what we're dealing with, what barbaric way of to burn people alive. You think that in your wild man, there is no explanation of this. Your heart rips out every second. Going through houses by houses, seeing all these scenes, women, children, adults, men, without understanding, And you're talking about these are people that lived constantly neighbors with people from Gaza, giving them jobs, working with them, hoping for peace with them, taking them to hospitals, getting treatments in Israel. All this is are people that cared for people that live in Gaza. And in 1 second, everything was walking through the kibbutzim. It's beautiful, quiet, feeling the atmosphere over there. And then all of a sudden, you see the houses, you see what they're going through. It's unbelievable.
I was there in March, and I had a visit to Kibbutz Nir Oz, and also to where the Nova Festival took place. In Kibbutz Nir Oz, I saw houses that were completely burned. What do you know today that happened? I know that the terrorists came in and put the houses on fire, but where were the families? What exactly happened there?
In Nir Oz, the attack was 8.5 hours on the kibbutz. They burned a third of the houses. They took capture a third of the population in the kibbutz itself. And they used their own vehicles and whatever had two wheels and above, they drove them into Gaza with their own cars and trucks and tractors and whatever it was. And they just burned the houses, a third of the population that were in their own houses. It took us weeks to go through every house, to sift from corner to corner, to try to get information, DNA, to try to find remains of these people that died inside, to try to identify who it is and who are missing still.
It was unbelievable. Can you explain to us, how do you identify? I mean, there's almost nothing left of those people. How do you identify so that you can tell the families, you know, who was there?
The only way is identifying through the ashes is to grow the DNA. It's a whole system that we have to work out. It takes very, very long time. But the only place around the world that has the special machines to do it is in the United States after 9/11. After the Twin Towers fell, and they had to provide a machine that's capable of dealing with the situation. So we get the help of America, the U.S., to be able to grow and try to find the DNA through those ashes. It's a whole system. It's not easy at all. Sifting from side to side to the houses and trying to collect bones or teeth to be able from that to try to build something. It's a whole system. It's not easy at all.
And were you able to find any survivors because you were one of the first people to walk into those places?
As a first responder, I was called in on Shabbat itself on October 7th. It was Shabbat. And as a medic, I was called in right away to come and provide help. And for sure, we had people that were able to help them still in some of the kibbutzim to save them after the army was able to kill the terrorists and let us go in to provide some help. So we were able to help also. But main thing that we came is to deal with the casualties of the bodies. This is something that not everyone is capable to deal with. And this is what we're trained to do. And because we're trained to deal with this situation, it's our purpose of doing it the proper way and by a respectful way, making sure that every drop of blood comes to burial, every bone and tissue samples comes to burial, so the families can know for sure that everything is done the proper way, and the respectful way, making sure that no one takes pictures and there's no need of having pictures floating around. But understanding the denial that happened after the Holocaust took 50 years Over here, it took 50 seconds. So the police have 200,000 images of what happened by taking pictures and making sure that every scene in every place and everybody was took. We have all the information, all the documents, whatever is needed. A lot of people ask, so why don't you show us? We can't believe you because we can't see. Well, we don't show because there is no respect by showing these images or having it floating around for generations. Who needs to see it? Our ancestors and our children do not need to see it. There's no point of that. We have to respect whoever is still alive and for sure respect whoever died. And this is the first thing that Zaka makes sure when we are on the scenes, this is our understanding. Never take a picture. But on this situation, we took and we gave it into the police. The police has it. And whenever they're needed, they bring out some of the pictures, some images to help out with the situation, but not letting it float around that everyone could do whatever they want with it and use it and disgrace the people that died.
Right. And I do want to address again and mention that there are a lot of videos, footages that were taken by the terrorists themselves, being sure. very proud of themselves and putting them on Telegram and it's out there and it's not us and it's not fake and it's real. So, but you actually saw it with your own eyes, collecting
As I said, I dealt with hundreds of bodies, me, myself. As a commander, I came to speak in the UN about the women's rights, and I went to speak in France, Germany, England, in the parliament to be able to really explain to the world what really happened over there as a first responder. And as I said before, we don't, for us, it does not make difference who, what the culture is, what who we're dealing with. We're dealing with humanity. We collected. You should know, after collecting 1,200 bodies of Israeli citizens, another 100 bodies of people that were working, Thai workers or different workers from different places around the world that used to work in Israel that also were butchered and killed in horrific ways, we collected 1,500 bodies of terrorists by understanding that we have to deal with this because it's also humanity. As sad as it sounds, as hard as it sounds after seeing what they did, but by understanding that we have to respect humanity. And there is no question, yes, no, for sure. It's hard. It's not easy at all. After seeing what children, adults, women went through these barbaric people, is unbelievable. But we had to do it to respect.
100%. And I do want to just touch it. I know it's a tough subject, but and I think the UN already acknowledged, you know, issues there with rapes and with, I mean, I don't know exactly where were you on that side of the map, but can you address some of it?
As I said, I spoke in the UN about women's rights. I came, I brought with me images and whatever was needed to provide the truth, to show exactly what happened, what I, as a commander, dealt with. I was the one to give the orders, do this, do that, how to do it, and what to do with these women that are not here and not can tell the story, what they went through in those minutes, in those moments, by understanding that we are their testimony, we are their voice. After the Holocaust, we had survivors with numbers on their arm. Here, we are the numbers. We are the ones that are standing instead of them, screaming, shouting, explaining what they went through, being their voice. And this is the most important thing, and this is what we're doing, going around the world, speaking, explaining, speaking for them, because they cannot speak anymore.
100%, and we appreciate it. I know how difficult it might be, I mean, to speak about it, but I think it's needed those days. And question, were you also around the Nova Festival on that day? I'm sure Zaka people were.
There were times that every unit came to different areas. The first day, the first 24 hours, I was basically on Highway 34. That's the road before 323. That's even further away, the entrance of Sderot. I took on the truck of Zaka 72 bodies in that evening. Close to 5.5 hours to clear a highway that takes maybe 3 minutes to drive, took close to 10 minutes just driving in between the bodies and the cars. Getting to the entrance of Sderot, piling up 22 bodies into the truck, then going back to the highway and dealing with the situation car by car for 5.5 hours from floor to ceiling. The truck was loaded with bodies. Going back to Shura, the army base, unloading for 3.5 hours, coming back to 323, heading towards the Nova area for hours and hours and hours and hours working and dealing with the situation. Our teams on the ground in the Nova collected 207 people that died in the Nova area, only in the fields over there. We had another 350 on the highways around there. That night of October 7, we collected 600 bodies.
Wow.
600 bodies just from the open areas. We're not talking about going through every kibbutz, going through days and days and days after. For 2.5 weeks, going through those kibbutzim, collecting bodies and remains. Some hands, some arms, some legs, heads in different places. Some bodies we found without heads. Some bodies were without limbs. We had to look around for days and days to collect it. And don't forget, the first few days, the first 4 or 5 days, there were still terrorists alive in the fields around. We were walking in one of the places, working on one of the highways, and all of a sudden, two terrorists jumped out and started shooting at us. We had soldiers with us, and thank God they were able to kill those terrorists. But a commander that was with us just got hit 7 bullets and died in our hands. By understanding what it means to deal under fire, totally in a war zone. Because we understood that every second that there's bodies around, they could be drafted into Gaza, taken as hostages. And we saw bodies were taken from different places around the kibbutzim.
So they took even bodies, like they killed people and then took
and
their
then
bodies.
Took their bodies, for sure.
Wow, and that's like, I mean, very, very difficult to even when I hear you, it doesn't register.
For sure.
It's unbelievable. And I do want to mention that the Nova Festival, for those who are not aware or haven't heard the story, the Nova was a music festival, even a peace, right? Peace music festival, where yeah. people from all over, not only the country, people came from outside the country.
All over the world. People came from different places. And yeah, that's our main thing is peace. So the festival was a peace act of peace, time of happiness, of young, older, everyone was there. I'm talking about people that live their life in peace and love and happiness. And out of that, all of a sudden, this terrible attack.
Right. And the Nova Festival, again, it was peace, it was love, it was in an open field, very close to the border with Gaza, but that is Israel. Israel is surrounded by borders from with different enemies. The people from Gaza actually used to come into those kibbutzim, at least, and work there and were in their houses. I did hear that some of those terrorists came with actual names of people, members of a family. I'm not sure that they knew, by the way, about the Nova. There are like different stories. Some said that they knew about it. Some said it was a complete surprise.
According to what we understood, that they did not know about the Nova because there were different. It was supposed to be in a different place, basically. What happened was, thank God, one thing for sure. Whoever died in the Nova is very, very sad. But one thing we know for sure, they saved a lot of towns and with their bodies. By dying there, the terrorists stopped over there to deal with whoever got killed over there. But really, their life saved a lot of different kibbutzim because their plan was to go to Tel Aviv and to Jerusalem, not to stop over there in that area. They were heading towards different places. And because basically 5,000 people were in the festival, people bought tickets. According to the tickets that were sold, there were 5,000 people over there. Wow. And by the gliders that came over the fence, they saw the people, they saw the party. And then they stopped over there instead of going into the other kibbutzim.
Right, and that's basically where you found the bodies. Again, I was there, so I can imagine now how it looks. But it was an open field, but then people were running also towards their cars or hiding behind bushes, and they just kept looking for them, finding them, and that's where you also found so many bodies in those cars.
That's the reason it took us 2.5 weeks to collect the bodies. There were different places, behind trees, on trees, under trees, under different bushes. We had to really look for the bodies afterwards and parts and remains for days and days and days after. We got calls that someone found a bone over here or something over here. Everything had to be taken, checked, made sure that it's nothing, it's not from remains from animals or whatever, because it's open fields. There are also animals that live there on a normal life. So everything, whatever we had to collect that. And after that, going through the kibbutzim and the cars for 18 and a half weeks, I was a commander in charge to make sure that each one was checked, was clean, so the families could come back to the houses and take the remains, whatever they have there, without seeing the disaster. And making sure that every drop of blood, every tissue sample and bone goes to burial according to halakha, because that's our understanding, that our lives is so important. It's like a Bible. If a Bible burns, we make sure that we collect all the ashes and we bury it. The same way a person dies in a tragical way, every drop of blood is important to bury and bring to burial, because that's part of our life and part of our being a human in God's creation.
And I heard also that because that the halakha, that some pieces that were found in cars, they just had to bury the whole car.
No, that's not real.
Okay.
The understanding of cars, we deal with situations of car accidents every day. So we have to really cut all the fabric. We have to strip out chairs and all that. But we never bury full cars. A full car, there's no point of burying it, because mostly we are able to take out everything. We cut everything into pieces. We take off the roof. We cut doors. We cut whatever we have to take, but we don't have to bury a full car. It never happened. It's not something that is needed.
No, it's good that you clarify that.
Yeah, because you asked, I explained it. It's very important that people should know, because at the end of the day, we are the only ones dealing with the situation and understanding, first of all, not only halakha according to halakha Yehudit, but we also check according to halakha of different cultures. Because when you come to a Muslim country or a Christian country, and you have to deal with bodies of Christians or Muslims, there's four different ways in the Muslim culture how to respect. If you do something without respecting, you're giving a very, very bad vibe to those people, to those families that you're coming and dealing with their body. So we have to learn according to halakha, everyone. The Bedouins have their own way. the Muslims, the Sharibi. There's different cultures in Muslim and different cultures also in Christianity. So we have to respect. We have to know how to be in the situation and respect that way.
And when you said Muslim, that's even another shocking thing, because they killed their own people. You're not talking about the terrorists. You are talking about Muslims living in Israel that, yes, I'm sure were approaching them, telling them, hey, we are Muslims like you. They spoke Arabic.
They were taken into Gaza. Young children, there were two girls with the hijab and everything else they were taking into Gaza, and until now we still have people in Gaza that are Muslims,
right,
from the same culture, from the same family, from the same, but the understanding and the believing and the way that things happened is something that we can't relate to, we can't understand. And this is what we're facing now.
Wow. So, I mean, it's an amazing story, and I know that you have traveled to speak at the UN and in Britain. What message are you sharing with the international community, where we're having very big challenges lately, and how does the response been?
The response is one thing, and what we're challenged is even harder. Because the situation that people are fed lies, okay? There's a lot of things that we have to deal with, and all these lies are coming out through different people that are not in Gaza and not in the situation and really not giving real information. And I'm saying it straight out as a human and a person that cares of humanity. We're very sad what's going on in Gaza to children and men and women that getting killed because Hamas. For sure, we would love to see free Palestine from Hamas, but that's already politics. It's something that I do not get involved at all. But we would like the situation to be different. And if the world would be able to understand that, sending money into Gaza is very nice, very helpful. But you're sending it to a terror organization, not to the population from Gaza. And when the money goes into terror, so what's the point? You're building terror. You are the one providing the terror. And you're the one that you're paying for all these massacres and all the situation. You're not helping the people in Gaza. And this is something that the world has to understand, that they have to have, it's not us, Israel. We 75 years supplied water, electricity, and everything else, and work.
And jobs.
And jobs. I think it's time that Israel stops providing that and the international Muslim world takes responsibility. But we're not the ones to decide. We're the ones to come and help and comfort whoever needs our help. And for sure, if they needed, we know that years back, Israel provided help for people from Gaza, medication, hospitals, even Syria, even Lebanon.
Even Sinwar himself, by the way, was treated and operated. I think he had brain tumor or something. And was.
So we need to understand. We need to understand this whole situation. Israel is the most humanity country. It has the IDF is the most exclusive and understandable dealing with the situation, but you're dealing with terrorists that using human as human shields. And this is something that you can't stop. If you don't stop the terrorists, you're never going to finish with this. It can be today exchange, tomorrow they can bomb us again. And forget about it. We're talking about ourselves. I said in different places in Europe that the difference between Israel and Europe is $400. So they said, what do you mean? I said, that's what costs a ticket to Europe. And these Muslims, the ones that are terrorists, are already in Europe. You could see what's going on in France, in England, in all around Europe. Hundreds and hundreds of Muslims that took over different areas, and they're heading for attacks. 9/11 wasn't enough what happened in the States. So you see what's happening today in the in all these young population in all the universities dealing with situations that you're facing, people that don't know what it means Palestine or what it means at all. Instead of facing the reality of facing against terror, again, if you look at it, this taking over all these universities, what is that? That's terrorist.
Right.
Taking over a university, you're not standing in front of someone, you're debating, you're talking to someone. No, you're demonstrating. You're taking over a place that's supposed to be open for everyone, Muslim, Christians, and Jews, as students, and you're taking over, and you're creating chaos, and you're creating a environment of hatred instead of trying to build something, a dialogue to try to work out something. Instead of trying to do that, so you're taking your own ability of taking over a place and controlling without letting anyone to decide what side or what is true, what isn't true. You're taking over understanding that there is no free will in a situation like that. And we're in America. We're not in some country that everything is done under pressure or under whatever. You're talking about America. It's supposed to be a free land, a free life. Live normal, live free. Everyone could live their life as long as they don't hurt each other or they don't face each other in a situation. So no. So you're taking over areas and you're causing chaos. You're causing a misunderstanding in so many young generations of people that what? Instead of fighting terrorism, you're causing terrorism. And this is the worst part. For sure, support. It's not only support. It's giving it a legit options.
Legitimize
of,
it.
Yeah, exactly. You're making that situation into something that people are going after, trying to connect to it, believing in it, that this is the way that the world has to live. Well, you're causing it to yourself. And by not stopping it, or by not talking against it, or by giving a free will for whoever lives in the United States, is something that you can't continue living that way. And tomorrow morning, the next terror attack could be anywhere. Not only in Europe, for sure here in the States. And
100%,
we see it can happen any second, anywhere. Because if we can't control the universities, you can't control anything else.
Right. And in the little time that we have left, I'm a therapist, so I have to touch that. How do you, as Simcha, as a person that have been there, that have seen it, how do you recover from that?
A lot of people ask me, so how do you sleep? I usually say on my left side, because you have to be a little bit funny. You have to joke a little bit, because dealing with situations like this, you have to be emotionally happy. You can't just lock yourself into the situation. But in the Jewish culture, there's always a praying that we say, "Lahagid baboker chasdecha ve'munatcha balelot." To praise God in the morning, to say thank you for what happened and we got up in the morning, but to praise God even more by able to fall asleep and to sleep at night without living the chaos and the images that we dealt with, because we believe that God is the one to create world. God is the one to provide us everything. And in His help and His hope, we have to live in this situation. As we say, lehagid baboker chasdecha, to praise God in the morning, ve'emunatcha balelot, believe in God at night when you fall asleep, when you try to fall asleep, that's the time to say, God, I'm putting myself in your hands. I'm trying to sleep. Let me live my life and hope that my strength continues to believe in you and continue doing right and doing the most, the utmost for the world and for everyone around us.
100%. And I'm sure you need a lot of support around you, which is, you know, mostly the family, but more than that, you need, I'm sure, your group of friends and your volunteers. There's a lot of you. And I'm sure you'll get some other help. Like, I mean, you can't run away from mental help when you need it, even though what you do now is the best thing that you can do for yourself is speak out and share it.
For sure. This is our main thing. This is personally me as a commander. The first thing was not to be attached to the stories. So all the kibbutzim that I was in charge of, all the kibbutzim from Sderot till Kisufim and further on, one by one, I know every story that happened. But my main line, my main guiding was, I do not know any names at all. I know only by numbers. All the houses were numbered to be able to provide myself care and self without getting involved by knowing the family, what happened, I know, but who they are, what they are, and afterwards dealing with what happened afterwards with the bodies, oh, who was captured and what. So I don't know those stories. And sometimes it's very hard for me because I meet the families of the survivors or I meet families of hostages. And it's very hard because they want me to share with them what I know, what I dealt with. And I ask them permission to let me walk away. I sometimes even say, please don't tell me your name. I would rather not know your name and to be able to live with what I saw without connecting with the finishing part of the story by knowing that this is enough for me and I'm capable to continue my life by knowing that I did the utmost whatever I was possible to do.
That's actually a very smart thing that you do, and we call it in therapy to disassociate yourself from the situation. Because if you go deep, you will get into a different state, and then it's very, very difficult to get out of it. And
My experience from as being a medic, I get called for a baby that didn't get up in the morning or elderly person that had a heart attack, and I'm there for the family sometimes after we see that there is no situation to help, and I help the families to be involved with whatever it is, sometimes the burial, sometimes whatever is involved. But I never would go to be a part of the Shiva. I'd never come for the morning time. Oh, I never go to Levayot. I provide myself that point of help up to that point, because if I know where the stage is to stop, and my responsibility was to go through every house and make sure it's clean. But I had to make sure that I provide whoever worked on this scene and this kibbutz collecting the bodies shouldn't come back to the kibbutz that he worked collecting the bodies and then clean the houses. Because when you were working collecting bodies, those 2.5 weeks, you're working like robots, under fire, under attacks, under situations that you can't believe and all that, but you weren't really connecting to the situation. By coming back to the same scene, cleaning it for 18, 19 hours, a room, all the images really comfort you, and then you can really go deep in and emotionally can't bear it. So that was my part of, because I'm the commander, I had to make sure that I know who was on every scene to be able not to provide it, not to cause these situations. And for sure, as you said, mentally, every volunteer, 4,000 volunteers, had to go through 12 sessions. Each one had to go through 12 sessions in the past half year. These are private sessions. I'm not talking about group sessions that was open, whoever wanted can come. but private sessions, each one had to go every month at least to two. And not only us, our wives, our children, our husbands, everyone, whoever needed in our, whoever is around us. And all this is done by funding these people to be able to be strong. And not only that, I can call now a volunteer that didn't go through mental care. If something goes up north, I can call him to tell him, okay, face the situation again. If he didn't get the, he wasn't provided the right care.
Right.
So that's the reason we have to be ready, because we know for sure up north is going to be much worse than the situation in Gaza.
For sure. Simcha, I can't thank you enough for being here and for sharing your stories. I know how difficult it is, but I really can't thank you enough. We will share when I'll post the radio show. I will also put a QR code or a link for donations, which definitely I believe the organizations needs. I do want to ask the audience, those that knows the story, those that doesn't, whether you are whatever language. I mean, English is an international language. Do share it with others. People need to hear it. People need to be able to understand what actually happened there. And Simcha, I believe, is also traveling around the world. So there is a way, I assume, to get in touch with Zaka. If people want to host a lecture or something like that, there are also movies in different cities going on, including in LA. So I do want to thank you, because I think you are doing, you know, the most that anyone can do. Like you said, you saw it with your own eyes and you are their mouth. You are same as if my dad was a Holocaust survivor. He was the mouth for his parents, his family, and all the rest. That's what you do. And I do want to thank you on behalf of not just the country of Israel, on behalf of everyone, not only Jews, for what you are doing, because this is unbelievable. And I admire you, seriously. I think you are a big hero. And I truly thank you for being here with me. And we'll keep following following you, following Zaka, and we will address the QR code later for donations. Thank you so much, Simcha.
Thank you very much for hosting us, and we should know better days around the world. And should be always Chaim v'Shalom al Kol Yisrael.
Amen, and amen.
We hope that peace will be around the world.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.